On this episode, we cover everything you need to know to craft your crowdfunding campaign to make it attractive for retailers. We talk about the pledge itself, how your page should be laid out, pre-marketing to entice retailers to your page, and why you should consider having a section of your crowdfunding campaign specifically for retailers. Let's get into it.
Game begin.
Let's go.
I used to be a marketer like you until I took an arrow to the knee.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another awesome episode of Crowdfunding Nerds. I am your host, Andrew Lowen, and I'm joined as always by Sean and not Rick. In Rick's place, we have Will Schultz of Night and Day Games, a fantastic store based in Las Vegas that has a significantly sized online presence. Topic of our conversation is really dedicated to retail. Being successful at retail as a board game publisher, or really any sort of product publisher, is critical to your long-term strategy. I mean, you can build a strategy where you sell direct only, but if you add others to help you sell, it's going to add another dimension to your business. It's going to increase the what I call the long term, the tail of the product, and you're going to be able to sell your thing for longer. So in order to help us figure out how we can do well in a retail store, we have Will, who is an extremely large, who represents an extremely large and very successful retailer in this space in Night and Day Games. So let's get into it. Sean, you want to start us off?
So Will, why don't you just tell us a bit about yourself and how did you get here?
Yeah. So hi, Sean and Andrew. Good to see you guys. So I work for Night and Day Games. We're a retailer in Las Vegas, Nevada. We have an actual brick and mortar store, and we have a online store. And I got to know Andrew because we got his game Deliverance, and we got the all-in pledge, and we got the deluxe edition. I actually bought the all-in myself, and it's probably one of my favorite dungeon crawlers at this time, and can't imagine that's going to change. And we were talking and figuring out how we can support retailers, because I see so many times on both ends where a retailer is like, hey, we stopped getting crowdfunding games because it's too difficult. Or on the other end, people just saying, oh, well, we're just going to push retailers to the end and hope that they want to get our game in a year or two from now when it's actually done. And yeah, so just thought I would just give my perspective just on the industry standpoint from a retailer.
So the idea for our listeners listening in is that you would follow Kickstarter projects, you'd bulk order certain pledges, and then you resell them in your brick and mortar stores out there in Las Vegas.
Yep, that is the ultimate goal.
Cool. So I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast are aspiring to go to Kickstarter with their game, or they've gone with multiple projects. So when it comes to looking at Kickstarter projects or GameFound projects or wherever they are, what are sort of the key things you're looking out for? Because obviously your business is built upon understanding demand and then ordering the right amount of copies, because you don't want to order not enough copies and then you're sort of not able to meet the demand, or you're over ordering stock and then you kind of have your assets kind of locked up in games that you can't get rid of. So what are sort of the key things that you look within certain campaigns to kind of measure how many copies you should be ordering?
As far as copies go, that's always a tough one just because it depends on the publisher. Like, one thing that I've noticed is successful that a lot of publishers do is they'll come out with like a smaller game first to build an audience and then go with their big, you know, their niche game that everybody knows them for, unless you already have an audience. We normally try to order at least 12 to 24 of every game, and we usually try to get as deluxe or as Kickstarter, you know, exclusive as we can, just because if it's the retail copy, people are just going to wait for the retail copy to come out. Even if we did it like a week before, 2 weeks before, like, that's great. Obviously, if there's, you know, some type of cost benefit to us. And then another thing that I obviously will always look out for is a retailer pledge or something in the actual campaign itself to contact them. Because when I don't see that at all, to me, that just says, hey, we don't want retailers, and that is totally fine. That's your total business call. But then for me, I get people in our Discord saying, hey, can I get this game through you? And then I say no, and then they ask again, and then I say no, and then they stop asking about certain Kickstarters, and then I just don't want to lose them altogether as a customer because we're not getting Kickstarters in, even though obviously we are, but there's some companies that don't support retailers. And like I said, that's totally their call, because I know the constraints of shipping 48, 100, 200 games has got to be mind-boggling.
Yeah. And so how long have you been sort of operating like this and doing this line of work?
This has been going on now for a year. But we have Kickstarters going out for 2, 3, 4 years, because there's a lot of very nice publishers that will have extra stock. Like, for example, Orange Nebula, they basically reached out and said, hey, you got this much Vindication from us. Would you be interested in this much Unsettled? Obviously, yes. Great games, great publisher all around. So, and that always helps when they have like a bundle deal. And you can just get everything all at once, especially as like if we're selling it in our store, it's easier for employees just to have like a list and say, when you get this, you get all of this, rather than, oh, well, we have the core game and then we have this deluxe game and then we have this super deluxe game and then we have this deluxe game with some paint on it, you know, it's already pre-painted, you know, so stuff like that.
So Kickstarter just seems to be like the ideal model for retailers, right? Because it's, you know, direct to retailers. There's no sort of, you know, middleman. It kind of benefits both the publisher and the retailers. What are some of the advantages or disadvantages of this model that you've encountered?
The obvious advantage is you can market your game as a publisher extremely well. And there's those big companies that it seems like it's almost a pre-order model for them now, which is great. I mean, you got to find your way of doing business, right? But as far as that goes, most people, what they do is they'll give like some type of deposit, whether it's $1, $5, enough for a whole case, 2 cases. Because obviously, if you just do $1 as a retailer pledge, and the game, let's say it doesn't go so well or keeps getting delayed or anything, as a retailer, it's really easy just to say, okay, we lost $1, let's move on. Rather than, oh, we bought a case, we put $100, $200 in this game, we should probably see that we can finish that game. And then as far as the Kickstarter model, I personally prefer GameFound more as the retailer side, because they have that built-in pledge manager. Mm. Where Kickstarter, it seems that we have to deal with email invoicing and stuff like that, which is totally fine, of course. But the obvious issue there is I'm emailing with 30 to 50 publishers a month trying to secure games. And obviously that can just get lost in translation, or we're working with publishers across, you know, like getting games over from Europe and trying to directly import from there as well. Because sometimes people just keep their games over there, which, like I said, it's all about business calls there. I'm not here to tell people how to run their publishing company, because I will never run my own.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think a lot of people can find it tricky kind of following a single crowdfunded campaign. But when you're in your position where you're backing several at the same time, you're trying to keep tabs of where everything is. Do you just have like a massive spreadsheet where you keep tabs of everything? How do you keep on top of all that organization?
Every time I'm interested in the game, basically I have a Google sheet of multiple tabs. I put what we're interested in, I send it to our company owners, and then they kind of look it over and say, okay, this looks good. And that could just be the amount of backers, or it's a type of niche art or something that goes beyond just, you know, not like, oh, it's another one of those type of games again. Which I think is the beauty of crowdfunding, is you can kind of just do whatever you want, especially if you're self-publishing, because a lot of these self-published people might have a game they really enjoy and there's no publisher that's biting on it. So they just said, you know what, let's do it. Which is why I think retailers can really help, because obviously we can offset production costs in a way, because we're going to order 24, 48. I think even some Kickstarters, we've ordered 100, you know, or 150 copies of a game. Like Planet Unknown is a brilliant game, and they're coming out with that expansion and it's deluxe still, and that's great. And it's great that they're allowing us to get the Kickstarter edition, because it happens frequently where it's like, oh, you can back our game, but you can just get the retail copies. And it's like, well, I'll just wait for them to go to a distributor and then I'll just get it from there.
Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at like the pledge levels and you come to a retail pledge, what's the most ideal layout of that pledge? Can we maybe give some people some tips of some of the things they should and shouldn't do, and some of the wording they should do, or What kind of like price should they be listing, or what kind of is the minimum order value, you know, orders you're looking out for? What are some of the things within that pledge itself that really makes you bite?
Well, the one thing that will, I think, make any retailer bite is when you type control F and then you type in retailer to see if they even have the word retailer anywhere on their whole page.
Okay.
That's usually the quickest way. And I think it's kind of like an insider joke in the industry is control F, start typing retailer, see if it's even there. Right? If it's on a page, because where a lot of people go wrong is they put it in a picture and yes. You can't search that picture.
Can't do a word search.
And as much as I like scrolling through 20 Kickstarters a week, it's a lot to scroll through where I can just control find, type retailer. But then going on to your point, I think having any type of wording saying, hey, this is just a deposit, or you're able to get anything you want out of this, because it seems like there's like early backer bonuses or these newer like pre-launch pledges where you give like $1 and you get some type of exclusive $5, $10 expansion for free for pre-launching a game. Mm-hmm. If I can try to, as a retailer, get that, obviously if we have to order a certain amount, that'd be great. Just because, like I said, we're just trying to get as competitive as possible. And if I say, hey, this is the Kickstarter bundle, but I'm missing some things, they're not going to probably go with us, and they're going to probably try and find another retailer, or they're just going to back directly, which, like I said, as a publisher, that's amazing if you can get a bunch of people to back directly, right? And we don't try to list anything until the publisher tells us to, right? So we won't list, like if we back a game, we don't list it until at least that campaign's over, or some publishers will even reach out or say in there, you can start collecting pre-orders when the pledge manager closes, because obviously we would be competing for their own business with their own game, which is kind of self-defeating, publishing your own game if you're losing out to a retailer selling your own game. Yeah, just going on one final point with that, either saying how you're going to finish it off, like there's going to be a pledge manager involved, or we're going to reach out to you via email invoice, like all of that is totally okay. And then also explaining how you're going to do shipping, because some companies want shipping right away. And the only problem that I've had with that as a retailer is when the shipping charge goes up, then we have to pay another charge. And then I have to keep updating that spreadsheet into an additional cost tab to say, hey, we paid $5,000 for this game in shipping, but now we're adding on another $500 there, even though it wasn't part of that original charge.
Mm.
But like I said, as a publisher, it's always good, obviously, to collect as much money as you can early on, because you don't want to fail.
Yeah, and then I suppose it's also better for just as like a number in terms of you raised X amount, that you know, getting those retail pledges in there where they're leaving a somewhat hefty deposit can also be quite attractive from
or even a backer number. Like I've had a lot of people reach out saying, hey, you're good, but could you back for $1? Because then our backer number goes up. And if that's what they want to do, perfect. Because like I said, as a publisher, it is your responsibility, because it's your campaign, to run it as you see fit.
So when it comes to 90-day games, do you ship internationally? Do you offer games to people in Europe, for example, or Australia, or you just primarily focused in the US?
We tried shipping internationally, and the thing is trying to collect customs fees and the amount of times that, like, for example, we sent a RPG book down to Argentina and it took 2.5 months because it went to Australia first.
Okay.
And trying to constantly keep up with that one customer alone on how long their shipment is going to take obviously becomes a negative cost. Because we're spending so much time. I mean, the customer was very nice, very friendly, but they would email every 2 or 3 days, hey, is there any update? And I, you know, you try to say we're not the shipping company, but obviously you have to take some responsibility because you're the one that shipped it.
Yeah.
So we've tried shipping internationally and we will look at exploring that soon. But right now we're just sticking with the US. But a lot of people I see use freight forwarding companies, mainly based out of like New Jersey and Oregon from what I've seen. So they'll order a game, we ship it there, and then it ships. They must have some sort of locker where they get enough games that they can ship from there.
And then would your local stores also host certain gaming events, or is it just, you know, you walk in and you can purchase games, or do you do any type of community events, or are there way are there areas for people to sit down and play games?
There, yeah. So we do have a play area, and I will shout out my friend Matthew Meeple. We did host an Ascendancy play test a couple months ago. Cool. He's a local Vegas guy, had a great, I think it was a Kickstarter campaign, and now it's on GameFound for the Pledge Manager. But really enjoyed that. Had a lot of people. Oh, perfect. Okay, well, there you go. Not insider information there, everybody. But yeah, so, but just going on with that, we try to host anything we can, whether it's playtesting or you actually have like a published game ready to go. Like, I think we hosted another one called Paragons. It's like a TCGS type of game, but you get every card. And they're just local Vegas people. And then finally, we had Jeremy Rousley do Four Horsemen at our store. That was like, and then we also had Mark from Board Game Barrage play in that play test. So he was able to give like a live review on his podcast simultaneously. He's the Green Tank, if anybody follows Board Game Barrage, because he lives in Vegas now and shops, comes to our store frequently. Really nice guy.
Cool. So am I correct in assuming that originally the stores were owned by the Gaming Goat and they've now been acquired by different owners and there's been changes? Is that sort of my understanding correct?
Yeah. Yep. So we have new owners that completely bought out the former company and now that entity is gone. I think there's a couple like local stores in other states, but they're all separated from us. We're just one entity of Night and Day Games.
Okay, cool. So it's the same stores in the same location, just rebranded, new owners, and sort of continuing the same spaces people to engage with board games.
Yep. Yeah, we even took over the publishing company to finish off the tournament fishing campaign for that as well, the fulfillment for that.
Great. So
that was
How's that been? Because I know we helped with promoting that campaign. I do know that there was delays in getting certain products out, and it must have been quite difficult kind of jumping in to a campaign that someone else had been running and then to try and work out what needed to be done.
Yeah. So I actually am the only remaining employee from the Gaming Goat. Obviously there was some transition times that I just stayed around because the new owners are really great friends. I literally just played Magic and Star Wars Unlimited with them this week. And the problem with finishing that campaign is it was just the way of how the former entity was wording how they were going to fulfill the campaign. And so we just said, hey, we're just going to ship out these games to Surfing Meeple and Maple Games and Zatu Games. And they were able to figure all of it out. And I believe the last backers in Canada are getting their games now. And that should finish off the last of the TGG games fulfillment.
Cool. That's I'm glad that you're able to sort that out, because it's always a
Madigo and Surfing Meeple have been awesome. Yeah, it was definitely a hairy situation for a while, because it's like the owners bought the company and then it's like we're trying to start a new store, start a new brand, you know, and then it's like, oh, but you have to finish this game. And it's like, okay, like we bought it, we'll do it, that's great. And then it was like, but they don't have the games yet. And then it's like, okay, well, we got to get them the games, you know, like. So it's been fun, to say the least.
Yeah. And then I suppose you also have to deal with a bunch of probably disgruntled backers who are waiting for their games, and there's all these delays because of the switchover of the company and whatnot.
Yeah, well, respectfully disgruntled, because obviously the American backers got their game very early on, and then the internationals had to wait months, if not a year, to finally get their games.
Great. Yeah, I think it's important. You know, I suppose you could have just said, well, you've written it all off, but, you know, to actually go in and fulfill the obligation and get that done is really cool. So is there any other tips that you can give folks when it comes to retail pledges? Maybe going back to this idea of demand, are you looking at sort of how many backers or how something is trending? Or is it more of a hunch that, oh, I have a feeling that this is going to do well in our retail store? What are some of the kind of key indicators of a particular campaign that makes you go, yeah, this is one we're going to jump in on?
First key indicator is if I'm Facebook friends with them and I know them, that always helps.
Okay.
Just being familiar with those people. Obviously, if you're a brand new self-publisher, that is a totally different ballgame. And we even try to highlight those people in our newsletter. We do a weekly newsletter And we just did one with Eric Chen. He did Sabobotage and runs his own company of launch brand Grow. They're like their own kickstarting platform in a way. But yeah, so just going on with what we see. Another thing we use is that KickTrack. I think it's KickTrack.com. Just seeing how popular a certain campaign is. And then obviously always looking at the amount of backers for something. Because if there's only a couple hundred people getting the game, what you have to accept as a retailer is saying, okay, this is a cool game, but does everybody that want this game get it already? Or is there a bunch of people that probably don't know about this game? And then we have to accept that we might have to market that game ourselves to sell it, which is totally okay. Because like I said, if there's a great game out there, I don't really care if there's $1,000 on it or $1 million on it. If it's a good game and it's unique and there's good mechanics and there's good people involved, we will.
You know, that's really interesting that you say there's this kind of an argument that I use to counter someone's desire to go to Kickstarter or to make their game at all. After if they go to Kickstarter and they get 300 backers, the argument rather is more like on the distribution side. Let's say they fund their Kickstarter, they get 350 backers, and that's how they did. Now they want to go to distribution or retail or, you know, that kind of thing. I always ask them, actually, it's more of a statement. I say that all the people that bought this game that were the ones that backed, those are the only people that wanted it. And you have to, it's like an opening statement, a hypothesis, and you have to prove it wrong. And if you want retailers to back your game, you have to show that there is a market for it. And I think that part of the whole equation to doing that is making a statement with a crowdfunding campaign. So I personally view crowdfunding campaigns as less of a, like, I need to bring my dream to life and make this thing that's been in my head. But it's more of like a marketing statement. It's like, there is a market for this product. And that's why pre-marketing is so important. That's why a strong day one and, being newsworthy is important. For Deliverance, it was really, really important to me that people would see this quote unquote Christian thing as something to be taken seriously. And that's why it needed to raise the money that it did. You know, I wanted to see it do well, but the purpose is more to show others that this is something to be taken seriously. And so for our next Kickstarter, you know, if I can go out and raise $1 million, and the first Kickstarter did 300K and the next one did, three times that much, then it's going to make even more of a statement. Honestly, if it does more than that, if it has more backers than that, than the first one, and it shows that there's more of a market for this product now. And does that look more attractive, to you as a retailer?
Well, I think consistency is obviously always something a retailer wants to get, because they don't want to be stuck backing with somebody that, let's say, they have 2, 3, 4 campaigns out that they're not even done with, because now we have this pre-order up for months, years. And then you get people wondering, hey, I'm going to buy that game, and then I'm going to wait for that game to come in before I ever buy from that store again. So now they're waiting 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and now they're afraid they're not even going to buy a copy of like Heat that we always have in stock. You know, because they haven't gotten their Kickstarter from 3 years ago, even though obviously as a retailer, I can only take so much fault to getting a game in.
So, Will, one thing you talked about is when it comes to considering games to back, you kind of look within your network within Facebook. And I think this is kind of highlighting for our listeners the importance of organic marketing on Facebook and kind of making your game known within different communities. Could you maybe highlight some of the Facebook communities or groups that you're connected with, or where do you go within Facebook to kind of find some games or connect with other people?
I usually just check Andrew's Facebook every day to see his whole entire family smiling.
What games are Andrew's family playing?
Yeah. But obviously I always go to Board Game Geek. There's a Board Game Geek Facebook page that's great. Board Game Revolution. There's Board Game Hype. And then the two I usually frequent is there's like a Playtesters one. That I forgot the guy that runs it, but there's like a game playtesters, and then there's also a retailers who back Kickstarter's Facebook page, which I think is huge, because you can go on there straight up and say, hey, this is my term sheet, this is what we're doing, which to me is a lot more attractive as a retailer than saying, hey, we're going to have this game. We might not have a retailer pledge, but we'll consider you after we make our games, because obviously it's going to be cheaper to make 1,000 games than 500 games at the cost average. But obviously you're committing to 1,000 games being shipped, or 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, right? And there's some, you know, distributors that won't even take your game unless you can send them 1,000, 2,000 copies of a game.
So in terms of those groups, and let's say someone was to make a post, what are, again, coming back to this concept of what are you looking out for? Are there certain numbers or metrics that you're wanting them to show you, a certain pricing? If someone was to go to this retail group and leave a post, what's the best way they could frame their game to kind of entice you to jump on board with what they're doing?
I think obviously they have to mention crowdfunding nerds. Yeah, right? Like, so if they don't mention that, no. Day one, no. But just going on with that, I think just a decent price point for a game. Like, if you're trying to sell me some all in for $1,000 and it's not going to be here for 3 or 4 years, it's like, okay, but like, I'll probably have 2 kids by then, you know? So it's like, I'm not even thinking about that. So, but obviously just coming up with some sort of images, even what some people, which I love, is when they have like an actual reviewer for a game, instead of them just saying like, this game's great. It's like, okay, but like, who's saying that, right? Like, it's great to say your game's innovative. It's great to say your game's fun. But those are things a reviewer should be saying. Like, I think it's kind of concerning when you have to say your game is fun, or you say your game is great, or you say your game is innovative, because I would hope so, because I can just go buy a game that's already out if you're not innovating anything, or if you're not trying to do something new, you know, because that's why you're self-publishing, right? Like, you went to a store, you thought of this game idea that nobody else has, so you thought, I'm going to do it instead. And that's great. But I don't want to be marketed that I'm just going to get a same old boring game every time, because I can get those games anytime I want and they ship in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So a pre-campaign review then is pretty much essential in terms of trying to entice folks. And to be honest, we even find this when we market our clients, is that sometimes hearing a reviewer, like a pre-campaign review of the game, can often help us frame the marketing messaging, because they will often highlight an area of the game that the publisher sort of has a blind spot to, or they don't have never really thought about. So it helps us even frame our advertising even before you launch. So I'm a big fan of the pre-campaign review, at least having one before things go live. So it's interesting to see that that's something that you are also drawn to.
Well, because you got to pick your favorite type of reviewers, right? Like Andrew King, what he's doing with Galactic Cruise is amazing.
Yep.
Like, I feel like that guy has an update every day and everything's amazing. Yep. Like, it's like, I think today he just passed 10,000, you know, Kickstarter launch followers.
Yep.
And then he has the Dice Tower and the Dice Tower Cruise with a prototype already ready, right? Not just this idea. Like, when Matthew Meeple came to us with Ascendancy, he already had a prototype, obviously a working prototype. But prototypes aren't your final copy,
yep.
Right? But something that I could play and I'm like, wow, this game's great. We should back this as a retailer. And with what Andrew's doing with Galactic Cruise is amazing too, because he already has the Dice Tower recommending it. I think one of the guys gave it his number one game on the cruise. I mean, that's amazing for a game that isn't even in theory out yet.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I think that one's going to crush it. So it's super fun to be a part of that pre-marketing. And
yeah, everywhere I've gone on social media, I've just seen people praise it. So even randomly, I'm looking at like a comment on something else, and they reference that campaign. It's like, well, these guys are doing a great job with their pre-marketing.
I think they even got Lacerda to play.
Yeah,
like, it's crazy.
Now, hey, I have a question for you related to a retail edition versus a deluxe edition. So there's something that I've been working on with Deliverance, which is like, you know, I wanted to try to control the price on Amazon after the game is released. And we've had, you know, many experiences where, you know, controller or creators have lost control of their product on Amazon because they just, you know, print 5,000 more units than they have backers for. They send it to distribution and just say, I want to sell as many as I can. And a lot of people buy it. You know, you'll have distribution take 2,000 copies, and then some deep discounters will take the product, and then all of a sudden 3 months later you'll have the product discounted, you know, it was $100 on Kickstarter, 120 MSRP or whatever, and then you have deep discounters discounting it to like $80 on Amazon. and not even the, you know, I mean, it's just, it's the product is very devalued. And so what some people will do is they'll do a retail only edition where they'll only send a, you know, I don't know, like a $59 version to retail or to distribution, but then the epic $99 version is available directly from their website. What do you have to say about that as a retailer? Do you want access to the deluxe edition? Are you okay with being gated access to the deluxe edition if it's specifically through the, you know, like your only chance is like the Kickstarter campaign, or how do you feel about that?
Well, just going off of the information from your campaign, your all-in deluxe edition sold within a week or two of hitting the store, and the deluxe editions are still selling, but obviously we ordered a little bit more of those, mm-hmm. but those didn't sell out nearly as fast as having that all-in deluxe edition. Because I think a fear a lot of board gamers have is you buy a game and you really like mm-hmm. it, right? And now, and this happens all the time, like with like those Marvel Zombicide products, like great products, amazing minis, but they buy something and they're like, wow, I didn't realize that mini was available. It was Kickstarter exclusive to go on eBay mm-hmm. and it's $200 or $300. And now it's like, well, I could have just added it for $20.
Right.
Right. So I think there's always, it's not like FOMO in a way, because it's not like if you miss clicking by a day, you know, or something, you've missed that all in. And some people do that and that's great. If you want to have like a day one, you want to help your backers mm-hmm. out, whether it's a, you know, $10 off or a certain card in that game that maybe, you know, people have to pay for later. But the obviously gatekeeping can and can't help at the same time, yeah. right? Because as a retailer, I don't want to just get retail copies of a game, mm-hmm. right? I think that's just something like, and some people where they get confused with the wording is they'll write on their campaign page, not going to retail. But then people assume that we aren't ever going to get yeah. it. But then I have to explain to them, retailer and retailers are different.
Yeah.
Like you probably won't find this game at Target, but you could find this game at 9 Day Games, or you could find it at your local FLGS, or you could find it online at one of those great online websites as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah. Now, if you were to see a game, like you guys probably cater more to the deluxe gamer, the person interested in the, like you said, all the content. But let's say for a retailer that is only able to buy the retail edition, is that a negative if you wanted the deluxe edition and you couldn't get it? Like, why buy it at all kind of thing? Or
we'll get a few copies in, of course, just to have those games, because the fear of a retailer is, I was talking about this with Sean earlier, is if that customer comes into your store and they say, hey, can I get this game? Or say, well, we're trying to get the deluxe, don't worry. And they come in again. Hey, we're trying to get the deluxe. And then they never want to come back in because they've wasted their time.
Yeah.
Right. Where it'd be nice if they say, hey, this is never going to go to retailers either. Mm-hmm. Like this is only for Kickstarter, individual Kickstarter backers. Right. Like even if you're a retailer, you're not going to get this.
Yeah.
For me, obviously, I don't like that. Right. Because I want to sell as much of anything as I possibly can. Right. And get it as exclusive stuff as I can. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I have to respect that's the retailer's decision.
So what right, about
that's a publisher's decision.
Yeah. Sorry. Now what about if it's like, okay, you can't get this through distribution, but if you contact the retailer directly, you can get copies. That's kind of what we do where, you know, Deliverance is not in distribution right now. And I do sell to units to retailers that reach out to me. That's kind of a pain, isn't it? Like dealing with an individual, but if the fans come in and they ask for the thing, then that's what motivates you to get it, you know, to go through that extra hoop of talking to the individual publisher to get 6 units or 24 units or whatever. I mean, is that correct? What are your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't consider it a pain if they're a joyful person to talk to. So for example, like I email Chad Elkins very often, 25th Century Games, because they have copies of Raw Deluxe, which Raw is one of my absolute favorite mathematician games, auction games, you know, bidding games of all time. And they say on there exclusively Raw Deluxe, not sold at distribution. So you can only get it through there, which tells me I should make a note of that every time I want to order this game, I need to contact Chad. And Chad is a super nice guy. He always, you know, answers emails within a day or two, where some publishers I email and then I have to email again and then email again and email again. And a month or two goes by and then they'd say, oh, sorry, we're out of that item now. Uh-huh. It's like, okay, thanks. But I've been telling this customer for a month or two, I'm contacting the publisher. I can even show you all my screenshots, showing all my emails. Like I'm trying my best, but, and that's okay. I get it. As publishers, you can get super swamped. You can get super busy. You could be in the middle of another campaign fulfillment, right? Mm-hmm. So just anything like that. But just going on with your point, I would just say it, whatever you think is going to work will work, right? Whether that's through distribution or there was that concept of the FLGS store, where I think it was Brendan at Open Owl Studios was doing something similar to that, or he was actually the one doing that, where as a publisher, you could go there. And then some publishers will use unique distributors like, is it Gamerati up in, I think I emailed Ed Healy up in Washington, mm-hmm. right? So you can just say, hey, you can list their games, you can sell their games, you can take a cut, but we'll just deliver them directly. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily have to do the front load of finding those customers, because Gamerati and those other type of companies are doing it for you.
Yeah, gotcha. And so if I can clarify or rather recap what I understood, it sounds like retailers are kind of like elephants that never forget. And you may never know as a publisher, if you don't get back quickly or promptly to a retailer, you may actually be harming the long-term relationship that you have with that individual retailer, that individual buyer. And, you know, if you fail to get back to them within a reasonable amount of time, you could actually be not only ruining a sale, but kind of souring a relationship.
Yeah. I mean, you see it all the time in the gamer or the retailers who back Kickstarter's Facebook page.
Yeah.
Almost every three or four posts. Hey, does anybody have contact info for this? I've been emailing this company and I haven't heard anything.
Yep.
And it's just like, oh man, like, do I even want to try reaching out to the company? It's like, maybe if I wave some cash at their face, they'll send me a game, you know, but at the same time, it shouldn't take that,
yeah.
right? It should just take, I mean, and even if an email takes once a week, that is fine. As long as there's some sort of timeline for communication, mm-hmm. as a retailer, I'm fine with that because I don't need to get 1,000 games in at mm-hmm. once, right? As long as I know what's happening with the game, what happened with my, you know, because some, like we talked about before, some publishers will make their own pledge manager. Some have, you know, they'll use Hive. Yep. They'll use, well, there's a couple other ones. They'll use BackerKit. They use Kickstarter. Well, Kickstarter isn't really a pledge manager, is it?
Yeah.
But they'll collect all the funds through Kickstarter. Like, Fort Circle Games for Votes for Women just says, hey, when you do the retailer pledge, you're just getting a case of games and you're going to get free shipping on them, or there's a certain shipping quote. And if you want more, email us. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I know what I'm getting. And as a retailer, I'm committing to those copies, right? It's not yep. just a $1 thing I can just click and then say, you know what? That game doesn't look very good anymore. It's getting really bad reviews mm-hmm. or it's delayed forever. I'm just not going to worry about it. I'm not even going to try selling pre-orders for yeah. it and just move on.
So I had another question related to I have about, you know, 5,700 people on my email list for Deliverance. And I also have about 47 of those people are retailers that I've separated out into their own retail, you know, list. We probably have more now that after, you know, that we have to add to that list of retailers. But question for you related to getting emails from a publisher like me. I'm pretty certain that you don't want updates for things like, you know, look at this new art piece coming, you know, for an upcoming expansion. But do you like getting emails from publishers when it's like, hey, you know, this is an opportunity for you to stock up on this particular product, announcing this thing. Do you like getting emails like that? Or is that more of a bother to you? What's your perspective on how a publisher should email you guys and solicit for buy? You know, for buys.
I mean, I think I get pretty numb to emails because I get so many Kickstarter update emails. but as far as getting it from a publisher themselves, whatever you think is going to help sell your game, right? I think that is always the ultimate goal of sending an email. Like obviously establishing good rapport, having a good communication system, you know, keeping a relationship, friendship going, right? Or just that open line is great. I don't personally care how many emails I get for some games or for any game, as long as I know that they're trying to sell their game. Because I feel like so many people, they're like, I've made my game, I'm done.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but like, as a retailer, I just bought 24 copies of your game and nobody knows about it. So now I have to mention it in our newsletter. I have to take time to post it in our Discord, to mention it multiple times, post it on the Facebook. And that's great, but that's just time I could be spent making our store better rather than trying to sell a certain game.
Yeah.
But some games will just sell amazingly. Like you'll see Facebook ads. Like I remember, I believe you had Facebook ads for Deliverance, right? Yep. So I didn't have to worry about as a retailer trying to sell that game, because you were already trying to sell it.
And a lot of people were knew about it and were asking about it and that kind of thing. Do Facebook ads drive interest to, I mean, this might be a neophyte question, but do Facebook ads drive interest in your store? Like if
yes.
Go ahead.
The one thing that really drives it, one of our store owners, Morgan, loves looking at them, is Board Game Geek ads. Mm-hmm. He'll just see a game and say, wow, I've never heard of that. And we find the retailer, or we find the distributor, whether it's like Bridge at, you know, with David Finn or anything like that. And we just reach out and we get that game because it just looks interesting in that 1 second ad that we just saw on Board Game Geek. Because obviously it's just keeping it fresh in your mind, where I think there's some games you publish them or you just say, hey, we're coming out with this game, it's amazing. And then, like I've said before, that year or two or three goes by and then it's like, man, is that game even coming out?
Yeah.
And then you see those people in like those groups saying, hey, I got a shipment notification. I wonder what game this is. Oh, I completely forgot I bought this game. And you're just like, as a retailer, that scares you. Because it's like, if these people had just spent $500-$600 on a game, don't even know what they bought. How am I going to sell that to somebody in the store when they're looking at the price tag of a $600 game compared to, they might go buy a similar space-themed game, zombie-themed game, whatever it is, for $50. Mm-hmm. Even though it might not be the same game at all. Right, it might not have these painted minis or these things you can't see on the outside of the box.
Yeah, yeah, that's really interesting. For Deliverance, one of the things that we committed to do is quarterly, what we call scenario packs. They're basically free, official supported scenario pack PDFs that allow players a couple of new scenarios once a quarter. And what I was thinking was I wanted to support our player base and give them new content, with a board game, it's a lot harder to do that. You know, DLC is available in video games and it's a lot easier to distribute that when you've made it. But, for board games, you know, making a physical product is a big challenge, especially with the amount of capitalization that a lot of these companies have. They, it takes a long time to spend money at the factory, get it, shipped and everything. And then, now it's ready to sell. So I thought PDF would be really great. And I wanted to kind of get our player base to continue playing the game and to get better at the game. And in that way, I wanted them to kind of be ready for an expansion. And after having played a bunch of games of Deliverance in various new scenarios and that kind of thing, I wanted that to kind of be a little bit of a long-term play to continue, to get our fans to keep playing the game. Would that be interesting to a retailer, any kind of support for your game like that? I mean, how would you go about, it sounds like yes, based on what you said, but how would you go about communicating that to a retailer? Like we offer, we're planning on offering long-term support for our game. It's easy to say, but like what moves the needle for you when somebody says that?
It moves it well. Like I was talking to Incredible Dream Studios. They did Kinfire Chronicles and they have a couple other games coming out with Kevin Wilson at their like game design helm. And they basically reached out and said, hey, here are our terms. And then in the future, we're going to look at giving, retailers certain things, certain items. And for me, that's absolutely incredible to hear a retailer's getting something specific, but like a brick and mortar retailer. Like you can only get this if you physically walk into a store and try to play this game.
Oh.
Like that's amazing. And then for you to keep the PDFs going, I think as a consumer, if you know you're buying a game where there's a healthy community and you can get help or you can ask questions about it, rather than you're gonna go in the back, left corner of the shelf, buy this game that you look at, you've never even heard of, you go on Board Game Geek, there's like a forum post in the past year for it. Even though the price might be cheaper, do you really want it? Right? If you're not gonna you're gonna buy it, you're gonna read the rule book and say, wow, I have a question about this. You post on Board Game Geek and you wait a week, two, nobody answers, and then what? right? But with the constant support of the community, that's always important. Like we have, you know, a 2,500 member Discord community, and that's where usually I get most of our, like we have a crowdfunding games page and people just throw in there all the time. Hey, can you get this game? Are you going to get this game? And I'll say, hey, they don't allow retailers. I'm going to try my best. Yep. Or yes, we've already backed.
So to continue about Board Game Geek, reaching number one hotness is probably going to be something that gets your attention. It certainly did when Deliverance reached number one hotness in December. We had a ton of orders, a lot of retailer interest. We sold probably 400 or 500 units direct to retail just in a few days, or you know, in whatever the 9 days that we were there. But what other things move the needle for you when you go and you see something on Board Game Geek? Do the number of reviews make a difference? Do you know what else, if anything, makes a difference other than like being number one on hotness or potentially chancing on an ad?
Ratings, forum posts, comments, any sort of engagement in that game. Like it's great to say, hey, I have an 8.9 on Board Game Geek. And then you go there and there's like 5 reviews and nobody's talked about it in 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
Right. So then it's like, okay, did this person even send out review copies? Did they make sure people could play their game beforehand? Cause like what I've noticed is also successful is like, I just got an email about, I think it's All Play sent out an email this week, Mark over at All Play. He said they have a game that's already available to play on, you know, Board Game Arena. And that's great because as a person, you can already try playing the game. And as a retailer, I can already try to start selling that game in a way because they walk in, they say, hey, I'm interested in this type of game and say, well, there's this game that's not even out yet that you can go play and try for free. Like, obviously, we're not going to make money on that right away. But if we can say we're going to carry that game 100% because we get everything that All Play does, we have a partnership with them in Dice Tower West, which is great.
Awesome. Hey, so related to things real quick about like Board Game Arena and accessibility to games online. So you said it's a pro to have the game available on something like Board Game Arena. Does Tabletop Simulator carry the same weight or table or board game? What are the other ones? I'm thinking like,
I play Tabletop Simulator personally. That's my favorite thing. But one suggestion I made to the guys at Galactus Cruise is if you're going to publish all of your files, make sure there's some sort of watermark. Because you don't want another kelp situation where all of your files are leaked online and people are publishing your game on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a year before it comes out.
That's a pretty wild thing that kelp went through. And so it was Tabletop Simulator that caused that to happen.
It possibly was, but I don't know if that was entirely, but if you publish your full files on there with everything on there, what's going to stop somebody from just saving the files and reprinting them?
That's a good point. Really good point. So Sean, is there anything else that you wanted to ask Will while we have him here?
No, I think I've asked all my questions. We've covered a lot of ground. Yeah, thanks, Will. I think it's been very helpful for our listeners to kind of see the perspective from a retailer and how they can best craft their marketing, their pledges, their page layout to really get those larger orders coming in from, you know, local friendly game stores. So yeah, I appreciate your time.
Yeah. And
yeah. Thank you, Sean, for meeting me. And thank you, Andrew, and God bless you too.
Thank you. And now before we let you go, will you please share with our listeners where they can find you? And, you know, you've obviously got your, the Discord as well, but how can people connect with you guys? What is your website? What can they expect to find if they go there?
Nightanddaygames.com, night with a K. They can find over, I think, 3,000 board games. We carry over 18 certain TCGs, you know, 100-plus RPGs. A lot of stuff Kickstarter exclusive. And then they can also go to our Facebook page or our Discord page. And I'm pretty active on the Discord page constantly. Yep. Whether it's 1 a.m., 5 a.m., 9 p.m., I will respond to you.
That's so cool. Well, on behalf of our audience, we really appreciate you and appreciate your time. Thanks a million. And let's have Robot Richard send us out.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Crowdfunding Nerds. For more resources, articles, and to listen to past podcasts, please visit us at crowdfundingnerds.com. And if you have a crowdfunding question, we also have a page on our site where you can send a message directly to us. Please visit crowdfundingnerds.com/question. And if your question is a great question, we may include it in a future podcast. Thank you all again for listening to this week's episode, and we'll see you next week. Stay nerdy.